I need to go back and read it again.
And now you'll know how to pronounce Kukubri.
Yeah, yes, I will.
Hey, readers. I'm Ann Pogel, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 171. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on the show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Readers, today we have a one-of-a-kind episode for you. During my trip to Scotland back in December, I sat down in person with Ruth Anderson, a brand new bookseller in Wigton, Scotland. If you follow my blog, Modern Mrs. Darcy, that's at modernmrsdarcy.com, you know my husband Will and I visited Scotland's national book town just before Christmas. We got to see the sights, visit more bookstores than I thought possible in one little town, and help our friends Mel and Dave run The Open Book. Longtime listeners may know that's Melissa Jewell-Wan, a previous What Should I Read Next guest. We chatted about her love of Jane Eyre and how the last page of a novel can ruin the entire thing back in episode 60. Highly recommended for you to go back and listen to that now. But now about The Open Book. You may have read about it online. It's a bookstore with an Airbnb apartment above it. And the deal is when you rent the flat, you also get to run the bookstore. It is a book lover's dream come true. We met Ruth when she popped into The Open Book to say hello and welcome us to town, and she also told us that the Voltaire joke on the signboard that we had done out front was truly terrible. And readers, she was right, it was. How does Voltaire like his apples? Candied. Get it? I know, it's bad. About Ruth, she serves on the board of the Wigton Festival Company and is the proprietor of Wigton's newest bookshop, Well Read Books of Wigton, which just opened back in September. When I met Ruth, I was so grateful. I had decided at the last minute to pack my recording equipment just in case. And that was before I even went in her shop and experienced that. Readers, I can't wait for you to listen in and experience Ruth and her shop yourself today. And you really do get to do both. Because this episode was recorded in the actual shop and during business hours, you'll get to experience some of the bookshop atmosphere there, like the ding of the bell on the door, the creaky floorboards, even customers shopping in the background. If you listen closely, you may even hear the joiner, that's carpenter to you Americans, building new shelves in the back to hold more of Ruth's books. All right, so it's off to Scotland. Let's get to it.
Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, well, we are sitting here in your bookshop.
Yes.
Well Read Books of Wigton. My husband and I are here with some friends. We have come to see Scotland's book town of Wigton at The Open Book next door, and we're delighted to meet you when you popped into the shop the other night criticizing the horrible Voltaire pun on the sandwich board.
Yes.
But we loved hearing the story of your own shop that has only been open a few months now.
That's correct. It opened on the 21st of September, which was the first day of the 20th Wigton Book Festival.
Tell me a little bit about that book festival.
The book festival started obviously 20 years ago. Wigton was really a town very much on its uppers. The creamery had closed, the distillery had closed. There were many, many empty properties in the town. Scotland at that time was looking for a national book town. I think there were five other competitors, but Wigton was selected, and it has gone from strength to strength.
Some people have heard of Hay on Wye, but don't know that there are other book towns throughout the world that have an enormous ratio of bookstores to citizens and visitors.
Yes, I mean, Hay on Wye is the one that more or less everybody has heard about. It used to be, as I understand it, I must confess I haven't been to Hay on Wye, but it used to be held within the precincts, really, of the town, where there are many independent second-hand and new bookshops. But it's got so big now that most of the events are now held outside the town in a sort of field area. Whereas here in Wigton, there are about 13, 14 independent bookshops, a variety of very nice cafes and restaurants, and the book festival is held in a very small area within the town, either in permanent venues like the county buildings or the what's known as the print room, or in some of the big marquees that are put up specially for the occasion. The festival lasts about 10 days, approximately 250 events. Most of those are talks by authors, but there are also outdoor activities. This is a dark sky area, so people who are interested in astronomy have opportunities to see things. It's historically a very interesting area. There's some good archaeological work going on down at Whithorn. We've got a beautiful coast. We've got wonderful hills. So there's a real mixture of indoor and outdoor activities that people can become involved in. And there's also a young person's part of the festival and events for younger children as well. So a real mix for everybody.
By opening on the first day of the festival, you really jumped in with both feet.
I did indeed.
How long had you been planning to open a bookshop?
Only 2 or 3 months, really.
Oh, wow.
The truth be told. It was an idea that people kept saying to me in the town, because I retired in 2017. Mm-hmm. And I had a little cottage in the area here, which I had intended to use as a holiday and retirement cottage, really. I became involved with the Wigton Festival Company. I volunteered in their shop, which is the only shop in the town that sells exclusively new books, because it cannot be in direct competition with those who sell second-hand books. And I volunteered there, thoroughly enjoyed the experience of working in a shop. One or two people suggested, why didn't I open a bookshop? So without actually giving it too much thought, I got pretty enthusiastic about it, and here I am. So I bought this property. It was an abandoned pub, and I got the keys on the 3rd of August. The fabulous local workmen came in. The tradesmen have been fantastic, and I was able to open approximately 6-7 weeks later on the 21st of September.
Do you remember what the first day of business was like for you?
Because I had nothing to compare it with, I don't really know whether my festival was a good festival or not, but it was just nice to see people coming in, admiring the fresh paint smell, obviously. Seemed to be pretty enthusiastic about the stock that I had. That had been a big worry, that I wouldn't have gathered enough secondhand books to make the place look professional and respectable. But I needn't have worried about that, because once you start looking, you really end up with books coming out your ears. So I have plenty of good stock, which I just hope people will appreciate. I'm hoping for a good spring, summer and festival next year.
Well, I hear that we are here in December during the quiet season, and we are thoroughly enjoying our stay. So I can only imagine what it's like when it's busy.
Yes, I mean, it's nice to see, you know, a dozen people just in the shop looking at your shelves, lifting books, buying them or not buying them, as the case may be. Mm-hmm. And what's really very gratifying is when somebody comes in fully anticipating that your answer will be no, and they say, you don't happen to have a copy of, and when you say, yes, I do, people get so enthusiastic and so just so happy mm-hmm. to get a book that they've obviously been looking for and been unable to find.
Mm-hmm. We're sitting in your shop now, and listeners, we will post lots of photos on the show notes page, so you do not have to rely on your imagination here. But it's so cheerful. You have wonderful lights. The counter from the old pub is very welcoming and a nice little haven for you to
hide behind.
I was going to choose a different verb, but it's a very cheerful green, and I know you chose that on purpose.
Because when the pub was functioning, it was called the Grapes, and I decided I'd have this bright, quite luminous green. It's actually called Luscious Lime.
Oh!
But it's a nice green, and the grey that paints the shells, it's called Urban Obsession. So we've got these most peculiar names, but for very nice paints. And all the shelving was made specifically for the show, and the joiners came in and really transformed the pub into a workshop while they made all the shelves. So,
and it looks incredible, and your selection is quite extensive, but you mentioned that you considered limiting your categories here.
Yes, at one time I thought it would be good to have a bookshop that sold only fiction and to call the business Pure Fiction, but I decided that I really had to extend the genres. So I sell a reasonable amount of young reader and young adults. Mm-hmm. I don't do picture books because there's a very good shop in the town called Curly Tail, which specialises in that kind of mm-hmm. material. Thrillers are tremendously good sellers. I've got quite a decent history section. I've also got quite a lot of classic fiction, but I also have a lot of classics, as in Greek and Latin texts, history, drama. I would quite like, in some ways, to have a specialist section on that, because that's one of my own interests, mm-hmm. 5th century classical Athens.
Is that a personal interest or was it professional? Because I did see your barrister's wig in the corner.
No, I was a lawyer for 40 odd years, but about 10, 12 years ago, I decided I'd do an open university mm-hmm. degree, and started off being a history degree, and it ended up a degree in classical studies. And I took up my classical Greek again, which I hadn't done since mm-hmm. I was at school, which was 50 plus years ago. And that just developed. I got the degree. I then went on to do a master's in classical studies. And I became really interested in 5th century classical Athens, in particular, Greek tragedy, and just general social mm-hmm. history, religious history of that period.
That is quite impressive.
Well, just something to keep me interested, really. I've decided now that I really know more about 5th century classical Athens than I do about the history of my own country. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about doing something by way of studying Scottish history. So I've started preliminary reading on that just now.
Design your own course of study?
No, there's a course offered at the University of Dundee, an MLit in Scottish history, and I'm thinking about that. Haven't committed myself yet, but I'm thinking about doing that.
Okay.
I find that although I read lots of fiction, if I'm going to read non-fiction, it needs to be structured. Otherwise, I would never get through the books. So it's got to be a combination of reading and studying with some deadline to put in an essay or something.
Okay.
I work better that way, with some structure.
Well, Ruth, I can't wait to hear more. Now, just in browsing yourselves and discussing what's here, I've heard a little about your reading life, and I can't wait to hear what books you choose to discuss today. You know how this works. You're going to tell me three books you love, not necessarily your favorites of all time, but three books you have thoroughly enjoyed. One book that, for whatever reason, didn't work for you. I've heard about one of those already, too. I'm wondering if you stick with it. And what you're reading now. And then we'll discuss three titles you may enjoy reading next. I'm not going to let you go without getting a recommendation or two from your shelves for myself as well.
Thank you.
So, Ruth, tell me about the first book you love.
A book that I finished just 2-3 weeks ago was Pat Barker's The Silence of the Girls. I'm interested in books several of which have come out over the last few years, which are updated takes on some of the classical stories. And this one by Pat Barker, and I think she's a terrific writer, takes the story of Briseis, who was the princess captured and given initially to Achilles at the beginning of the Iliad, and over whom there was a fight, not a physical fight, but it almost got to the physical fighting stage between Agamemnon and Achilles. The story is told from Briseis' perspective, and really enjoyed it. And that follows on, I haven't read yet, Camilla Shamsie's Home Fire, but that I think will be interesting. I've also read recently Madeline Miller's The Song of Achilles,
yes,
which was very good. She has a new one out called Circe at the moment. That's on my pile, but I haven't read that one yet either. The second choice that I've come up with is A Fine Balance by Rahinton Mystery. I read it many, many years ago. I cannot really give you any detail about it now because so many years and so many books have intervened, but I just remember it as being a thoroughly enjoyable, absorbing read. And it's one that I've got a couple of copies in my shelf and I think I might go back to because I really did enjoy it at the time so much. But the actual plot, the characters, the detail now, that's gone.
Have you noticed any common threads in the books that you really enjoy, the ones that really stick with you for decades like this one has?
Just, I think, it's a bit like film. Sometimes, you know, I remember really enjoying, for example, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, but I can't really tell you all that much about it. It's just the impression, I think, of to how I felt at the time when I saw a film or when I was reading a book. But the actual detail of it, I don't really retain. I would need to study the book. And these are books that I haven't studied. I've simply read for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And they've given me great pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
I remember A Fine Balance, lots of funny conversation in it.
Uh-huh.
And just good characterization.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever studied fiction works in the same way that you've studied the nonfiction that you love?
Well, yes, when I was at university mm-hmm. in the 60s, I did English literature, so I mm-hmm. must have at that time. But it was things like Spencer's Fairy Queen and some Dickens. I can't even remember. T.S. Eliot, I remember that. But that was just a means to an end in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And you were being made to read somebody else's choice, which is fair enough. But mm-hmm. what I remember at university was looking at what other people who were doing different courses were reading.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started just choosing other books to read. I remember somebody must have been reading the Guy de Maupassant short stories, and I remember reading that, and Stendhal's Scarlet and Black, and things like that that weren't part of my course, but obviously were being read by other people who were doing other things at the same university at the same time.
So you were reading other people's homework for pleasure?
Well, yes, I think that's when it really started.
We have a lot of people who listen to our show or who participate in our book club who say, oh, please give me homework. Will there be a worksheet? Because they miss that from their school days.
But I think that's why I quite like some structure. If I'm studying, I need the structure of the studying, really.
So The Silence of the Girls, A Fine Balance. Those were different genres. What's your third book, Ruth?
My third one is a Wally Lamb book, I Know This Much Is True.
Oh, I just read that for the first time a few years ago.
The first Wally Lamb I read was She's Come Undone,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was terrific. And my daughter also enjoyed it. Then I read I Know This Much Is True and thoroughly enjoyed that one. There was a third one I wasn't quite so keen on, the title of which I can't remember. And then when I was in Australia this year, I found another one, which she's just recently published. And again, I can't remember the title.
I can picture the cover.
I read it and I thought it was up to his good standard again. I thought I really did enjoy She's Come Undone, but I particularly enjoyed the one about the twins.
The one about the twins, which is a sweeping story,
yeah.
covers many years. You go very deep with these characters because the book is nearly 1,000 pages.
Yes, big chunky book.
You clearly don't shy away from the long ones.
No, I quite like when I'm wanting something light. It would be like last week I read 2 Michael Morpurgo books because I do sell young adult and junior readers material. I'm not really up to date with them now because my children are grown up, and I enjoyed both those Michael Morpurgo books very much. But these are books really that, certainly as far as an adult is concerned, you can read at a sitting, a couple of hours, you'll get through one of them. And I think they're very clever, they're funny, they're quite thought-provoking as well. I really enjoyed both of them.
What age customers do you like to recommend those to?
Probably from about 10 upwards.
Okay. We'll put those in show notes so readers can find them. But that was a new author to me when you pulled those off the shelves this morning.
He's written a big range and is very good. He was the author of War Horse,
mm-hmm.
which was a big hit on the stage here and, of course, at the cinema as well.
So you like a novel that you can sit down and read in an afternoon, but it's okay with you if it's going to take you 1,000 pages worth.
Yes, don't mind that.
Ruth, how do you choose what you read?
Well, quite often by the cover, I'm afraid, and depends sometimes who's recommended it. If it's been recommended by an author that I wouldn't read,
mm-hmm.
then that will put me off a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably wrong, but I'm afraid that's reality. That does happen.
That is reality for many of us.
Mm.
I don't know that that's such a bad thing. You have to decide somehow.
Yes, it's a bit like my shelves here in fiction. There are some authors that I just don't stalk. And it's not out of some kind of intellectual snobbery. I just feel that some authors you can buy any charity shop,
mm-hmm.
and you can buy them very cheaply there,
mm-hmm.
and there is a place for them. I don't really see the point in my stalking them when shelf space is, by its nature, limited. I've got to try and keep good, interesting material for hopefully my regular customers.
Yes, who appreciate well-curated shelves. Ruth, can you tell me about a book that just wasn't for you?
Well, funnily enough, we were discussing earlier on the Brontes, and I must say Wuthering Heights, I got through it, but just an uncomfortable read, not very pleasant read. I appreciate, of course, you don't have to like characters. Sometimes the more unlikable the character, the more interesting the character. But I found Wuthering Heights a real struggle to get through, and it left a kind of a bit of, not a bad taste, but mm-hmm. just slight unpleasantness about it, so.
How old were you when you read that one?
I read it just maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
Had started it before. It's a bit like some of the Russian novels. Some Dostoevsky I've started and got to 50 pages and put it down and vowed that I'd start it again. But I've got a copy of The Idiot on my shelves here that has 3 and 6 pence on the cover and a spine which is pristine from about page 60 onwards, but it's really wrecked for the first 60 pages. I don't know how many times I started that book and I've never got past about page 60, 70. But on the basis that time is running out for me, I'll really have to have another go at it.
It's practically within arm's reach.
It is.
When you're behind it. But so were a lot of other books. I really relate to your Wuthering Heights experience. I just read that in the past 5-7 years. I'm glad I read it, and I'm never going to read it again.
Yes, it's a bit like that's what I actually said the day that I climbed Ben Nevis. I'm glad I did it, but I won't be repeating the experience. It's the highest mountain in Scotland, and it's called Ben Nevis. I've done it, and I won't be claiming it again.
Ruth, what are you reading now?
Well, at the moment, I'm reading a Dorothy L. Sayers detective book featuring Lord Peter Wimsey, mm-hmm. and it's called Unnatural Death. It's the first Dorothy L. Sayers that I've read. I'm enjoying it. It's very much of its time, but she's clever, and she's pretty ingenious. And I still haven't worked out who the killer is yet, and I'm about halfway through. But She's written quite a few. There's a connection here because one of her books, called Five Red Herrings, mm-hmm. is set at least in part in Kirkcudbright, which is just about 40 miles from here. So she's known in the area.
Really?
But she was one of the golden age of detective novelists, along with Agatha Christie, Josephine Tay, Marjorie Allingham, Niall Marsh, people like that. And there's always a market for those books here. I've got a little classic crime section. People do buy them. And I've been amazed at the number of Agatha Christie's that sell.
I read Five Red Herrings, again, in the last 5 years, not knowing that I'd be in Scotland right now. Now I need to go back and read it again.
I know, and now you'll know how to pronounce Kirkcudbright.
Yeah, yes, I will. I might have to come back and listen to this episode again for a refresher, but I will. What else are you reading right now?
I'm starting to read some Scottish history. Mm-hmm. I've picked up Neil Oliver's book, A History of Scotland. I've got Tom Devine's Scottish History and another one by a chap called Ferguson, just to get a kind of general background mm-hmm. and fill in so many blanks. Because when I was at school, you learned about the Tudors and Stuarts. You did a bit about the First World War. Mm-hmm. And really, that was it. You didn't really get much about the history of your own country. And Scottish history tends to have been a bit romanticised, really, about these wonderful clans and the wonderful Mary Queen of Scots mm-hmm. and the Jacobite rebellions. Mm-hmm. And it'll be quite interesting just to get a bit more nitty-gritty about what was really going on from what we see in films. And interestingly enough, there's a new film coming out, I think it's next month, about Mary Queen of Scots. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see what they do with that story at this time, because the last version I saw was the one with Glenda Jackson when she played Elizabeth, and there was a meeting between Elizabeth and Mary, which of course never happened in mm-hmm. real life. So it'll be interesting to see what they've done with the story this time.
Mm-hmm. And you have a copy of Homefire here, and a much more striking cover than the American edition.
The paperback version has just come out, obviously won the Women's Prize for Fiction this year, and I think it will be interesting. So I've got that one, going to put it aside and take it home with me, try and get through it this weekend after I've finished the Dorothy L. Sayers.
Mm-hmm. A classic retelling. I can see what drew you to that. Ruth, is there anything you'd like to be different in your reading life?
Not really, no, I can't think. Maybe sometimes a little more time to read. But then I don't read at all in the shop. But then just being surrounded by books and looking at the titles, reading the blurbs, discussing books with people who come into mm-hmm. the shop, that's one of the real joys. Mm-hmm. And I really love it when, as I say, somebody comes in and finds a book that they've been looking for. I had a man in recently who was looking for P.G. Woodhouse, and he produced from his wallet the list of what I assume contained the 93 books written by P.G. Woodhouse, and I just happened to have one that wasn't ticked off in his list that he didn't have, and he went away really happy as a sad boy, as we say.
In his wallet, he kept this list.
Yes, he had the list.
I'm impressed.
It from his wallet, yes. You quite often get people with lists, physical lists, and I suppose nowadays people will use their smartphones for that purpose. Mm-hmm. But the older generation come in with the physical list.
Well, my cell phone reception is not so good here. I should have a list in my wallet. Well, it's always a challenge to recommend books to a bookseller.
Yes.
You've enjoyed The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker, A Fine Balance by Rohinton Mystery, and I Know This Much is True by Wally Lamb. Wuthering Heights was not for you. It's challenging, but out of my American experience across the ocean, I can think of a few titles that I'm curious to hear might be for you. Since we've arrived in Scotland, I have seen Maeve Binchy everywhere, but I haven't seen much Rosamund Pilcher. I don't know why I put those names together in my mind, but is she an author that you've read?
When I was much younger, yes. Did she write this Shell Seekers?
She did.
Yes, I read that one, but I've never read any Maeve Binchy.
I wouldn't prefer really, Rosamund Pilcher
wouldn't
myself.
Really think about Maeve Binchy as something that I would particularly want to read. But I did read Rosamund Pilcher, but probably 30, 40 years ago, something like that.
Well, I don't want to put you off Rosamund Pilcher by mentioning Maeve Binchy, but she has a book. It's called Winter Solstice. I just read this recently, and it is a found family kind of story. It's set in Scotland, particularly near Inverness when the plot gets going.
What period?
Oh, it's contemporary. It's about a group of people who don't know each other well, but who are brought together by their own particular grief. And it's set in December, in the Christmas season, but it's not necessarily a Christmas story. But these people come together because, for their own very specific reasons this year, they cannot handle celebrating Christmas the way they have in the past. So what they do, through a series of coincidences, is one by one agree to go to this old family, someone's family, not their family, estate near Inverness. They come together, they settle into the small town, and they try to move through their own troubling situation. They've all lost something or someone crucially important to them, and they're trying to figure out how to move forward without those things. It's touching without being melodramatic. It's engaging and sweet without being what we would call sappy.
Schmaltzy.
Oh, it's not schmaltzy. Rosamund Pilcher's covers can look a little schmaltzy. You've read The Shell Seekers, but the books themselves are not serious literary fiction, but they're very well done family stories that do go deep into the characters' lives. And I wonder if that could be an enjoyable, lighter read for you, yeah, set in an area that you know well. For another book you may enjoy, I know you mentioned that you really liked Marilyn Robinson.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you've read anything by another American author named Wendell Berry. He's a contemporary of Robinson's, and they write works that have the same feeling to them.
I have got one at home. There's a chap in the town here called David Sumner, who is a big Wendell Berry fan.
Oh, that makes me happy.
And in May of this year, one of the bookshops, Ian and Joyce Cochran at the Old Bank Bookshop, they have a sort of spring weekend. And David Sumner did a talk on Wendell Berry at the spring weekend. So it was really good. He's a big, big fan.
A talk on Wendell Berry in Wigton.
Yes.
I love it. I have a book in mind. Which one do you have at home?
I can't remember.
Well, that means I get to choose my favorite for you. Personally, there are two I love. And I have to say, most of his fiction is named after individuals. And sometimes those individuals have weird names. One of those is Jaber Crow. Jaber is a nickname for Jaybird. In the book, you hear the story of how he came by that name. But the one I'd like to choose for you is Hannah Coulter. Does that sound familiar, either
of
those?
No, it's a nonfiction book I have.
Okay. What Are People For is my favorite. And he has also written poetry.
I had never heard of him until I knew about this talk by David Sumner.
Oh, I like this David Sumner fellow. Yeah. Like Robinson, Berry writes stories set in the same world, in the same community, with similar characters, but they're not a series. And in Hannah Coulter, she's about 70 years old. Much of the book is interior. She's reflecting back on the life she's lived and the choices she's made and the course the relationships in her life have taken. It's a little nostalgic, a little wistful. There's a lot of sadness there, but Berry doesn't write books that don't have an element of hope to them. And all these stories are set in the small fictional community of Port William, Kentucky. You live in a small town. I think it would be interesting to read this small town story set across an ocean. A big element in Hannah's story is her husband Nathan's war experience. He went to fight in World War II as an American, and when he came back, he did not want to talk about it at all. It clearly changed him, but all he said about it was that they were ignorant boys killing each other, and his way of coping was to move on without discussing it with those he loved. But that lack of discussion really changed those relationships as well. So that's something that she keeps circling back to in her thoughts. But anyone who loves Robinson and has run out of novels, this is such a great next pick. And I love that it's already on your radar.
Are you aware that there's a little town not 15 miles from here called Port William?
No, I did not know that.
Yes, there is. So you can jump in your car this afternoon and go and visit Port William.
I just might. Except then I don't know if I get to walk down to the river. These are difficult choices. Okay, I'm going to wait just a second for that. There's yes, always something.
Can I just tell you, when David Sumner gave his talk on Wendell Berry, he read a passage, I don't know which book it was from, where the father is working in the field and the son comes home from war. Mm-hmm. David actually got quite upset when he read it. Mm-hmm. And he said that he knew he was going to get upset because mm-hmm. every time he reads that particular bit, he gets quite emotional mm-hmm. because it's so beautifully written. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing's very understated, but it's full of homecoming, mm-hmm. survival, emotion. It was quite interesting.
Oh, that makes me want to go read it again. Yes. My third pick for you, I wouldn't be surprised if you'd already read. I will keep it short and sweet because you know way more about this than I do. With your love of classics and your setting here, I'm wondering if you've read Joe Nesbo's latest installment in the Hogarth Shakespeare series. And that is Macbeth, set in contemporary Scotland.
No, I'm aware of it, but I haven't read it. I've not read any Joe Nesbo.
Well, as a bookseller, do these books sell themselves?
I stock them, mm-hmm. but I've never read them.
I think that might be up your alley.
Right. Interested in any recommendations? Because quite often it is by a recommendation that you will pick something that normally you would just bypass
yes.
on a shelf.
Yes, it's so true. And that's how I found some of the books I have loved the most. And some of those have come from booksellers. I couldn't leave your wonderful bookshop without getting books of my own. I'm a Pride and Prejudice collector, so I found in a darling little teal small edition that I hadn't seen before for £3. Also, you mentioned that there was a particular British Library classic series that you really liked, and all the titles were unfamiliar to me, and so I asked you to choose. Would you describe your pick to me?
Yes, I chose Mystery in White by J. Jefferson Fargen, and it's a Christmas crime story. This was the first of this new series that I bought. It's a selection of Golden Age Crime Classics, published by the British Library. And this edition was published in 2014 of something that had originally been published in 1937. So that's the period that we're looking at. And I think you'll really enjoy it. It's described by Martin Edwards, who's the series editor, as an entertaining story of crime at Christmas.
I think I need to read this while I'm still in Scotland. I will report back. Ruth, it's been a delight talking books and bookshops with you today. Of those three books we discussed, Rosamund Pilcher's Winter Solstice, Hannah Coulter by Wendell Berry, and Macbeth by Joe Nesbo, which do you think you may read next?
I'll go for the Wendell Berry.
Oh, I love the sound of that. Ruth, thank you so much for coming on. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Hey, readers. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ruth today. Head to the podcast site to share your recommendations and let Ruth know there what you thought of my recommendations. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/172. That's 172. And it's where you can look at the full list of titles we talked about in today's episode. Please look Ruth up on Facebook and give her shop a follow. It is Well Read Books of Wigton. That's Wigton. She's relying on readers like us to get the word out about her new shop. Please give her a follow there and share it with your bookish friends. And of course, if you're ever in Scotland, you know what to do. I wrote recently about my visit to Wigton on my blog, Modern Mrs. Darcy. You can check out that post at modernmrsdarcy.com. Next week, I'm talking to Sean Larkin about how he rekindled his reading life as an adult and how it factors into his busy life as a stay-at-home parent. Here's a sneak peek.
I'm reading whenever I get a chance. It's usually a few minutes here and there. I also homeschool my kids, so the bulk of the morning is taken up with teaching, and then the later half of the day the kids are playing and I get a chance here and there to read some.
It makes me so happy to see all the studies that come out about how having books in the home makes a huge difference in literacy rates, and seeing the adults in their lives read makes a big difference to kids becoming readers themselves. So you're doing it, Sean.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
You really should be reading Harry Potter right now, see?
Well, ironically, I am reading Harry Potter right now. I read aloud in the evenings to the family. We're reading Order of the Phoenix. So we're getting to relive them all over again. But it's even better this time because I'm getting to read it to my daughter and my sons, who pay attention every once in a while.
Subscribe now so you don't miss next week's episode in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. We will see you next week. If you're on Twitter, let me know there at Ann Vogel. That is Ann with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Tag us on Instagram to share what you are reading. You can find me there at Ann Vogel and at What Should I Read Next. Get all the latest What Should I Read Next news and updates by signing up for our free weekly newsletter at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/newsletter. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to show us, please share it with a friend, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or buy or borrow a copy of my new book, I'd Rather Be Reading, for yourself or a friend. We appreciate any of these things so much. Thanks to the people who make this show happen. What Should I Read Next is produced by Brenna Frederick with sound design by Kellen Pekacek. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.